And welcome back. I guess it's a fact that most doctors are more or less anonymous, known only in their relatively limited personal and professional worlds, but some become national celebrities. Our guest on today's program fits that category. He is a respected practicing physician with an emergency medicine background, but there's more to the story of Dr. Travis Stork. He spent one season appearing on the hit reality show The Bachelor, and he hosts an Emmy Award-winning syndicated television program called The Doctors, which airs here on Channel 11 weekday mornings at 8 o'clock. As if that's not enough, now Dr. Stork, who spent much of his youth, by the way, in St. Louis and is a Parkway West graduate, has written a book, a diet book, hot off the presses. It's titled The Doctor's Diet, Dr. Travis Stork's Stat Program to Help You Lose Weight and Restore Your Health. Dr. Stork was scheduled to be with us in person today, but the weather intervened and he had to cancel travel plans, but he joins us by phone. Doctor, so nice to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I am sad. I was hoping to be in town today, but with the weather as it is, the travel was postponed.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be in town today, Doctor. Believe me, it is not very pleasant. I think even during your time here in St. Louis, you probably didn't experience weather like we're having now, particularly the very low temperatures. So that
it's one of those days where, as an ER doc, I know the most important thing is right now people staying warm and staying safe.
You know, before we talk about your book, and that's the main reason why we're having this conversation today, I wanted to ask you how you balance your life as a celebrity and a medical practitioner.
Well, it's a work in progress, as my wife could tell you. She's actually a pediatrician, and so one of the things that I've really come to view my life as a host of The Doctors is, in many ways, when I'm hosting the show, I view it just like being a regular doctor. It's just that the audience is obviously much larger. So there's a lot of flights, a lot of commuting, and we tape the show in Los Angeles. So I'm literally on a flight out to Los Angeles once every week, and it's been a juggle. But I will say this: I really enjoy it, and we're in our sixth season now of The Doctors, about to hit our 1,000th show. And when it really pays off is when people stop me on the streets and they say, "Hey, Dr. Travis, I watched your show yesterday and I learned so much." And that's really what we try to do, is teach people little things they can do to improve their health.
I wonder if this is a really good way, though, for people to get their medical information. There are so many doctors' shows on television, it seems.
Well, I think the most important thing is to trust your medical information. And, you know, it's really important that, first and foremost, everyone has a good, solid relationship with a healthcare practitioner that they trust, because that's first and foremost the most important thing. And yet, in a day and age where there's so much misinformation out there, I can tell you I take very seriously my role hosting The Doctors to make sure that we present information in an objective way, because there's so much out there. And obviously, not everything you hear, whether it's on TV or online, is accurate. And so probably one of my biggest messages I share with our viewers and whenever I talk to people is, you know, being the CEO of your own health is the most important job in many ways you'll ever have. And informing yourself, learning who to trust is sometimes part of the challenge.
You know, the friends I have and acquaintances who are physicians, you mentioned online, they always express concern that so many people are trying to self-diagnose these days. They'll Google whatever twinge or ache or pain that they have and try to figure out themselves what's wrong without going to people like you.
Well, and that's part of the challenge, is self-diagnosing can be a dangerous business, as you know. But the other big thing, and one of the things I'm proud of hosting The Doctors and even what I'm on talking with you about today, is the more we learn about what keeps us healthy, one of the things I preach is actually good health does happen in between doctor's visits. And more people are embracing this idea of they're partnering with their doctors when it comes to their own health. And it's really true now. We know so much about how what we do on a day-to-day basis, the foods we're eating, the activities we engage in, they play such a huge role in terms of how well and how long we live. And those are all decisions you're making every day that are really in many ways independent of your doctor. And so one of my big goals now is really focusing on prevention and things that people can do to hopefully prevent having to visit the doctor too often.
Well, that, of course, brings us to the book. The title, once again, is The Doctor's Diet, Dr. Travis Stork's Stat Program to Help You Lose Weight and Restore Your Health. Dr. Stork, I have to say, we have another diet book on the shelves. There are plenty of them. I don't think there's one category or one genre of books and publication these days that is any larger than diet books. What makes this one different?
What's different, and I'm proud to say this is a book written from a physician's perspective. This isn't your typical diet in terms of you're going to go on some deprivation diet and lose a lot of weight in 1 month and then put it back all on in February. I think one of the most important things I've learned is that a true diet, one that works, is one where you're embracing changes that you're going to engage in for the rest of your life. So what I've done in this book is really put together everything I've learned, not only in my career, but things I do in my own life, and really trying to teach people how to not only enjoy food, but use food to lose weight, but more importantly, maintain it for life. Because one of the things we know right now in medicine is that being overweight and obese is really leading to more and more illness, food-related illnesses, and more people to the emergency department than any other problem, because foods we eat, they're related to heart disease, diabetes, even many cancers. And so when I wrote the book, The Doctor's Diet, the idea was, yes, I want to help people lose weight, but the most important piece to me as a physician is this idea of restoring your health, improving your health, decreasing your risk for disease, because, yeah, everyone wants to look good when they look in the mirror, but really what people want, I believe, is to feel good.
How easy is it to restore health? If we're talking about people who have problems that are based on overeating, is it kind of like stopping smoking? They say that the moment you stop smoking, your lungs begin to regenerate and to become better, become healthier. Is that the same idea?
It really is. And just like smoking, you know, Hippocrates was the father of medicine, and he said, let food be thy medicine. Unfortunately, as a culture, food has really become our poison. And you mentioned cigarettes. For people who smoke cigarettes, they know that obviously they can really harm health. Well, so can food. But the minute you start changing the way you eat, food really can become healing rather than harming. And I've seen it take place in so many patients' lives. And it does happen immediately as long as you commit. That's why I actually start the book off with what I call a stat plan, because if someone comes into the ER and they're really sick, we put everything in motion stat, right here, right now, right away, because this is such a big problem in our country. And people, I'll tell you what, when people make the change and they start living a healthier life, and I obviously try to outline not only how to do it in this book, but why to do it for your health, it's amazing how quickly, and you mentioned within minutes, really after that first healthy meal, people say they feel better. And that's why this book isn't deprivation. You're not supposed to feel worse when you start eating healthy. You're supposed to feel better. And yet a lot of people who've tried diets don't succeed because they're miserable and they're not eating foods they enjoy. And I think probably the most important thing for food being your medicine is you actually have to enjoy it. And there are ways to do that, but I call it recreating your favorites. So if you're someone who, let's say you absolutely can't imagine life without pizza, well, it may not be the pizza that's the problem, but the way that pizza is being made. And so a lot of little tricks I try to put forth in the book to teach people how to recreate their favorites, how to live healthy, how to lose weight, but also still enjoy it.
Well, and talking about that first meal that gets you on the right track and gets you to feeling better, what typically might that be or should that be?
Well, there are a number of things in the book. I actually have 10 food prescriptions. The number one food prescription is to eat with your mind. And what that means is trying to get over this mindless eating that a lot of us engage in. And that's another big part of the book, which is breaking up with sugar, because when we eat mindlessly, we tend to eat too much sugar, and sugar strangely turns a switch in our brain that makes us eat more and more food rather than less. So two of the things that I do in the book is, number one, I mentioned before, I teach the why, but the other part is when I tell people, look, I want you to cut back on your sugar, it doesn't mean giving it up. But when you cut back on the sugar, I ask people in every meal to add back in things like some protein and healthy fats, because what those foods do, and believe me, plenty of foods that are tasty have good fats in them and good proteins, they actually satisfy and curb your hunger. And so if you eat a breakfast, for instance, that has a good protein source in it, you're less likely to be overeating at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. And the whole idea is to use the food to prevent feeling hungry all the time and to really balance out the sugars with the proteins and the good fats, because when you get those in balance, food actually tastes better, and it's what your body really wants.
Well, when you mention protein, I think immediately of the Atkins diet, which was so heavily dependent on a large intake of protein. You don't want to go that far, I take it.
I don't. I'm a big believer in balance in life. And if you have balance in life, then that's truly, I think, what not only our bodies want, but our minds. And so carbohydrates have sort of become this pejorative term. And that's because, as a whole, we eat too much in the way of sugar. We know that. But that doesn't make carbohydrates bad. It just means that if you're eating too much of them, that's bad. But that's true of anything. I mean, you can drink too much water and have water intoxication. So in life and in food, I believe very much in this idea of balance. And so whether it's Atkins diet or other people have really embraced paleo diets, my big thing is you don't have to go to extremes. You shouldn't go to extremes. So what I've done in the doctor's diet is I try to outline very balanced eating plans where it can work for anyone. This is what I do in my own life. Because the minute someone tells you you can't do something, you have to cut out all carbs, for instance, I just don't think that's sustainable over the long term or the best thing for your health.
We seem to be suckers for fad diets. I mean, you talk about carbohydrates. There was a time when we were being encouraged to eat all the pasta we possibly could. Then we mentioned Atkins, and there have been others that have come and gone along the way. Now the big thing is the Mediterranean diet, which seems to make a lot more sense than some of the other things that we've heard about.
Well, in a lot of the Mediterranean diet, the things that we know that help us in the Mediterranean diet, I talk about that in the book, and I'll tell you what, it's a great diet to be on in terms of heart health, overall health, and some of the central tenets of the Mediterranean diet are food prescriptions I talk about in the book. So when you look at people who are living longer, wherever it may be, they're doing the smart things. They're snacking on foods like nuts instead of sodas, and sometimes those simple little changes are all that we need to make, because realistically what I've learned, and this is true growing up in the Midwest, there wasn't a night growing up that I didn't honestly, it seems like, have some sort of red meat on the table. And my family didn't grow up eating fish, and to this day, most of my family doesn't eat fish regularly. That doesn't mean we're not trying to increase that, but the most important thing is that no matter what kinds of foods you're eating, there's almost always a healthier way to be eating those foods. And there are a lot of ideals out there. And I always tell people, look, if you can eat healthy fish a few times a week, that's great. If you don't and you know you're not going to, let's look at what you enjoy and let's figure out a way to make that as healthy as possible.
I want to open this conversation to our listeners, Dr. Travis Stork. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. Before we start talking to folks online, Doctor, a couple of things I did want to bring up. One of them is the issue of white flour. I have seen a lot lately in which it's been suggested that we really should keep away from white flour. It deals with insulin and insulin spiking and insulin resistance, and that all can have a bearing on whether we gain or lose weight. Your thoughts on that?
I tend to agree with that. I think that we get a lot of sugar in our diets in unsuspecting places, and oftentimes it's in the white breads that we eat, the white flours that we use to make foods at home. And I'll tell you, one of the simplest tips I share in the book is if you can if you're going to eat a sandwich at lunch, or you're going to make something at home, even if you want to go with pancakes, the difference between a whole grain pancake versus a white flour pancake is that the way that that sugar is absorbed into your bloodstream when it's a whole grain, it's much more slowly absorbed. You get to fiber with it, and it ends up being a more constant, steady fuel source. But unfortunately, most products out there that are processed nowadays still have just regular flour as their first ingredient, which acts a lot like sugar in the body. So that's one change. If you look in my cupboard right now, you're going to see nothing but whole wheat flour, because that's the switch that my wife and I have made. It's the switch that all my friends and patients make, because it's something simple people can do starting right here, right now, and it does make a difference.
What is it about the lunches that we eat, Dr. Stork, that cause so many of us to get really sleepy about an hour and a half after we eat?
Well, there's that whole idea that after Thanksgiving, because of the turkey and the tryptophan, that's why we get sleepy. But for a lot of us, it really is. We overeat at lunch. And food is designed to give us energy. But if we get too much of that energy, particularly when you look at a typical American lunch, which may be really, really high in not only calories but in sugars, well, you get that massive sugar rush in your bloodstream, which ultimately leads to a sugar crash. And also, when we overeat, believe it or not, our blood flow is shunted to our gut because we have to digest that. And all that blood flow is shunted to your gut. Well, that can't be used for other things. So you're getting excess blood flow to your gut rather than places maybe you want it, like your brain, or if you want to, be active, to your muscles. And so there's a lot of things that happen when we overeat, and sometimes feeling sleepy is one of them.
We have to take a break, Dr. Travis Stork. We're talking about his book, The Doctor's Diet, Dr. Travis Stork's STAT program to help you lose weight and restore your health. We'll take that break now, and again, we'd like to get listeners into the conversation. What's the toughest part of dieting for you? If you have questions of Dr. Stork, give us a call, 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can reach us through Facebook, and of course, we'll take a tweet at STL on air. Back with Dr. Stork in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation with Dr. Travis Stork. He's the author of the book, The Doctor's Diet, Dr. Travis Stork's STAT program to help you lose weight and restore your health. But first, we have some news headlines before we continue our conversation. And here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio and the Beacon Newsroom are following today. The St. Louis region is in the grips of its coldest weather in 15 years. Some roads, including many side streets, may not be clear for several days, we're told, and there has been at least one fatal accident. And the first court case involving red light cameras in Missouri will be heard tomorrow. It involves attorneys for the city of Moline Acres, north of St. Louis, and local talk show host Charlie Brennan of KMOX, who received a ticket in that city. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now, back to our conversation with Dr. Travis Stork. Doctor, we have an email here from Jeremy and Mary saying, what about artificial sweeteners? Are they better for you? Do they make up for some of the shortcomings you see in regular sugar?
I'm actually not a fan of artificial sweeteners. It's one of the things I talk about in the book, because what seems like a benign alternative actually can reset your brain to crave even more sweets. And so when you look at studies of people who, for instance, drink diet soda versus regular soda, they actually still end up being at increased risk of things like type 2 diabetes. And the thought process, as we're learning more about this, is we are designed as human beings to crave sweets. And that's from way back in the day when sweets weren't as abundant as they are now. And what artificial sweeteners do for a lot of people is they trigger those sweet cravings. And so if anyone's ever drank a diet soda and then tried to eat a piece of fruit afterwards, we know that what we aren't doing is we're not learning how to appreciate foods that are naturally sweet. And so I actually ask people to not only help push aside any potential sugar additions, but also to give a few weeks to not eating our artificial sweeteners. It's one of the things I talk about as the stat plan in the book, is to give up artificial sweeteners and allow your palate to appreciate sweet foods for what they really are. And unfortunately, artificial sweeteners are so much sweeter than natural sugar that it's really hard to enjoy natural foods when we become addicted to artificial sweeteners.
But, you know, there are sugars in fruits as well, in fruit as well. So I'm wondering why eating fruit would be okay, even though you are taking sugar that way.
So sugar in and of itself, in moderation, is not bad. It's a fuel. So in fruit, what's the big difference? Well, fruit is also loaded with fiber. And what fiber does is it decreases the rate at which that sugar is absorbed into your bloodstream, so you don't get that massive sugar spike that causes so many problems. Because when you eat pure sugar, what happens is it gets absorbed quickly into your bloodstream. You get a massive spike in insulin, and that insulin actually drives that sugar into your cells. Over time, too much insulin tells your body to store more and more fat, and also those major swings in blood sugar levels are what ultimately can lead to diabetes. And so with fruit, that fiber plays such a huge role in not only GI health, but it does. It decreases the rate at which that sugar is absorbed from the fruit.
It seems to me that I've heard somewhere along the line that heart disease in this country really spiked probably around the beginning of the last century, when we began to import a lot of sugar from places like Cuba. Is that right?
Well, without a doubt, our sugar consumption, and again, it's not just pure sugar, it's the white breads and pastas, has led to this major increase in obesity rates, which has directly led to more and more type 2 diabetes, which has directly led to heart disease. So that's absolutely true. And the good news and the silver lining here is, here I am, a doctor, and I'm not talking about, hey, taking a pill. It's really, let's figure out how food can become your medicine. How can it reduce your risk of heart disease? And there's a lot of great evidence out there where little subtle changes can pay huge dividends. A study was just done in the UK where people were either put on a cholesterol pill or asked to eat an apple a day. And what's amazing is both groups lowered their cholesterol levels the exact same. So food really can be your medicine. And I think the silver lining is, although, yeah, there are a lot of unhealthy choices out there, we've actually never lived during a time where there are more healthy options available as it becomes more popular to become healthy.
I think you've just said that an apple a day can actually keep the doctor away. We ought to coin that.
Yeah, that would be a really cool phrase.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. We'll have to work on it. Dr. Travis Stork is our guest. We have some folks on the line who want to talk to you, doctor, so let's take their calls. We'll begin with Mark calling from Granite City. Mark, go ahead. You're on the air with Dr. Travis Stork.
Hello, sir. I have friends, and I appreciate everything you've said today and your wisdom, but I have the opposite issue. I have a hard time just eating, and I don't know if it's, I don't think it's depression, but I don't understand. Would you have any enlightenment for me?
My answer here is, and this is important, anyone, I don't know if this is new for you, I never try to diagnose people over the phone or on the radio, but anyone who's experiencing difficulties eating or they don't have an appetite, I always say the first thing you should do is actually discuss that with a healthcare professional, because there are medical reasons why people don't have the appetite that they think they should. And that becomes a true medical problem, because most people, you know, obviously have the opposite problem, which is, how do I put the fork down? And so my response would be, just check in with your doctor to make sure that everything else looks okay and rule out other things. And then you can start to focus on, okay, what, if it truly is just your overall appetite, what are some things that you can do to maybe improve your appetite if you rule out a medical cause?
All right, Mark, hope that answers your question.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Along these lines, doctor, you know, there are some people out there who would like to gain weight and have difficulty doing that. What would you tell people who need to gain weight to do? What would you have them eat?
Well, it's the same types of food regardless, because what's amazing is how everyone gets so focused on calorie restriction. Well, calories in and of themselves aren't bad. It's what are those calories made of? And so for a lot of people out there, if you're actually severely underweight, it's just as unhealthy as being severely overweight. And so I think one of the biggest things I'd like to mention is that we have developed a negative relationship with food in this country, where food is something many of us enjoy, but we feel guilty about it because it makes us obese, it increases our risk of disease. And for other people who are extremely underweight, for whatever reason, they may also have a negative relationship with food where they view food as evil. And it's really about changing your relationship with food to be a really positive one. And one of the things I say in the book is, every meal I sit down for, I enjoy it. And I enjoy it because I know, number one, I make it taste good in a healthy way. But I truly do eat that food in the back of my mind, knowing that it's improving my health, that this meal I'm eating is going to make me feel better. It's going to hopefully help me live longer. It's going to hopefully help me sleep better. And a lot of times food is that first hurdle to improving overall health. And people don't realize it, but yeah, what you eat, it does affect how you sleep. And those things become vicious cycles. And sometimes the choice you make when you sit down for dinner at night, boy, that choice doesn't just dictate how you feel an hour later. Sometimes it dictates how you feel the next morning, how your appetite is the next morning. And so it really is. It's a cycle that can either be a positive cycle or a negative one.
So it's a question of changing behavior, but also understanding what food and foods can do to you and for you or against you. Back to the phones. Pat will join us from St. Louis County, your old stomping grounds doctor. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi. I was wondering what he would have to say about calcium and D to ward off osteoporosis. It seems like last year there was a big study. We heard about it on the evening news about, I don't remember if it was calcium or D. One of them was not as effective as they used to think. Comment on that?
Well, my comment, first and foremost, is before anyone takes any supplement of any kind, they should discuss it with their doctor, because what you're referring to is there have been some concerning studies that people who actually supplemented with calcium, it did not improve their health, and there were some people who had negative outcomes from it. With vitamin D, we know that if people are low in vitamin D, that there can be negative health consequences. And what I tell people is, particularly if you're in a cold weather climate like St. Louis certainly is right now, if you're not getting a lot of sun, getting your vitamin D levels measured can be really important. And supplementation can be necessary and very beneficial if you know your levels are low. But indiscriminate supplementation with calcium and vitamin D, I don't advise. But the beauty is, getting back to food being your medicine, I tell people all the time that eating foods that are rich in these nutrients, we don't in medicine see cases of people coming in and saying, well, I'm getting way too much calcium and vitamin B from my food. We do sometimes see that from people who are over-supplementing.
And a lot of Americans obviously are. I mean, it's a hard sell. The industry works very, very hard at getting us to take those supplements and vitamins.
Well, supplements are one of those things where we love to take pills in this country. We really have become a country that we love taking our medicine because we think it's a quick fix. And in some cases, that may be true and also necessary. But the other big thing I always tell people with supplements is it's not only checking to make sure with your physician or healthcare provider that a supplement is necessary, but also just making sure you trust the maker of those supplements, because supplements are probably some of the most unregulated things that we put in our bodies.
Yeah, and there have been some horror stories coming from some of the sources of those supplements from overseas, where the controls are considerably less than they are in this country, needless to say. One of the things that I found interesting in your book, Doctor, was your concentration on spices and how to use them and how they can be effective in helping the way we eat and the way we eat intelligently.
Well, it's a burgeoning area of study because traditionally when we think of what's in our cupboard, we think of salt, and we put salt on everything. I certainly grew up that way in the Midwest. But what's amazing is how spices, we're finding more and more about how adding spices can improve our health, but also, no pun intended, spice up our meals, and they taste better, and we can cut back on things like sugar and salt because our meals taste better, it's more adventurous. But whether you're talking about turmeric, which is in many curries, having potentially anti-cancer properties, to anyone who enjoys spicy foods, whether it's red peppers or cayenne pepper, the capsaicin in there, which is the active hot ingredient, it actually boosts your metabolism, so you get an extra metabolic burn when you put that on your foods. Even pepper. You know, we think of salt and pepper. Well, salt, if you eat too much of it, can raise your blood pressure in some people. But pepper has something called piperine in it, which briefly also enhances your metabolism. So what I try to do in the book is tell people how to add these spices to enhance the flavor of their meals, but also you get that secondary health benefit.
Yeah, I'd like to switch gears, if I could, in the limited time that we have left here, Doctor, because I think a lot of people would be interested in learning a little bit more about your days on The Bachelor. I think that program is starting its 18th season tonight, and you go back a few seasons ago. How did that change your life?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be talking to you now if that hadn't happened. And what's amazing is I always tell people who are asking me what they should do when they're considering a career, whether it be in medicine or otherwise. I always tell people to be careful where you see yourself in 10 years because I, innocently enough, went to dinner with some friends after a shift in the ER many, many years ago, and a casting director approached me. And it was both a terrifying experience and one that was certainly unique and adventure and has led me to hosting The Doctors. So it's been a surreal run, but certainly one I never expected.
There certainly seems to be a bent in your career toward being on stage, if you don't mind my putting it that way.
Well, one of the powers that I learned being on The Bachelor and hosting The Doctors is the power of television. So when I was practicing emergency medicine before I'd ever even been in front of a camera, a lot of times I was taking care of people after it was too late. And that's the nature of emergency medicine. And I love that part of my career, being able to take care of people when they're sick. But the power of television is that you can reach millions of viewers and talk about prevention. And so in a strange way, I'm an ER doctor whose focus has become prevention because of the pulpit that I've been given and the power of television.
Well, I know that you only spent a relatively few years here in St. Louis. I imagine with the things that are going on in your life right now, it's not likely you'll come back here to establish a practice.
Well, St. Louis, many fond years, whether it's Mason Ridge Elementary School or Parkway West High School, St. Louis is where I grew up. And so I was really upset I wasn't able to come to town today because it's been a long time. My parents have since moved away, but hopefully I can get back to town soon and visit some of my old haunts and friends.
Well, we hope to see you when you do come back. We'll have to point out, by the way, you were scheduled for a book signing tonight at the West County Mall Barnes & Noble. That obviously is not going to happen, but hopefully you can get back soon and meet those people who will be disappointed that you aren't here tonight.
Well, thanks for having me on, and tonight, as an ER doctor, I always have to say safety first, so people should stay home and stay warm.
We'll be careful. That's Travis Stork. The book is The Doctor's Diet. Thank you so much, Doctor, for being with us. Good luck with the book.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at what can be expected from the session of the Missouri Legislature. It begins this Wednesday. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.